It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James from Commodity Classic in Orlando. Ran into Rob Schaefer, Greg Anderson, and Dave Walton as we're at the Clean Fuels Alliance America booth. And, Rob, we're going to start with you. You're closest, so tell us a little bit about you. Home in Illinois?
Yep, El Paso, Illinois, not El Paso, Texas. So I always have to say Illinois because back in the day before the internet, you know, whenever I ordered Cabela's or Bass Pro, I had to make sure I said Illinois so my packages didn't get shipped to El Paso, Texas. Yes, corn, soybeans, Angus cows there in central Illinois, about 15 miles north of Bloomington, Illinois, or 35 miles east of Peoria. Fourth-generation farmer on both sides of my family and really enjoy what we do and glad to be here at Commodity Classic.
Okay, Greg, let's get you teed up here. Nebraska?
Nebraska, the Cornhusker state, the beef state, but it's also the soybean state because we have growing soybeans there, more than double the acres that it was even 25 years ago. And I'm a fifth-generation farmer. In fact, this year we'll be observing our 150th year of our anniversary of our family farm. So that's going to be exciting. And happy to be here at Classic. This, as it's been said, this is a Super Bowl of all commodities, and it certainly is the case. And Clean Fuels has a great story to tell.
Dave, let's jump in and pick yours up as well. Iowa.
Sure. I'm from East Central Iowa. I'm just really about 15 miles from the Mississippi River. We farm soybeans, corn, beef cattle, and a few sheep. My son's in the operation now, and he handles the show when I'm gone doing things like this. But dad's retired, and it's a multi-generational farm. We're pretty diversified, but we get it done.
So let's talk, why are we at the Clean Fuels Alliance booth? And I'm just going to work our way back around. Dave, why are we here? Why are you a part?
Sure. This industry is really built on soybean farmers. We started the organization when it was NBB. Now it's Clean Fuels Alliance America, just to open it up and make it more inclusive of all the different products that we represent. So biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel. But it's really important for us because it's a use for our soybeans. It adds about 8% to the value of our bean. A 500-acre soybean farmer, that's about $34,000 a year that puts in his pocket just from this industry. So we're here to protect that industry and make sure that it continues to grow.
So, Greg, let's jump in here. And what about the investment that's made back into the industry? Is it a valuable investment for producers?
Well, certainly made the soybean business a good business to be in with the demand for biofuels, biodiesel, renewable diesel, and now sustainable aviation fuel. I'll take Nebraska, for example. We have two new crushing plants that are just underway, and that's going to – one is very close by in my county, about 40 miles away. The other is – that's the northeast part of the state. The other one is in the east central part of the state. Those two plants alone will crush 25% of our state's soybean production every year. And so what we're going to be seeing is increased demand. We're going to be seeing better basis levels. We're going to be seeing more competition for those beans, and elevators are bidding up. Already, I've seen some improvement in basis just with groundbreaking. So this is very important to the farmer's bottom line, as these guys will attest. As a soybean farmer, I see that the fuel that I burn in my combine is actually the fuel that I harvest with my combine as I combine soybeans, knowing that some of that oil will find its way into biodiesel and renewable diesel.
So let's bring it to the end user side. And Rob, maybe there's a place for you to jump in on those who use the clean fuels. Do you have any maybe firsthand accounts of how that's being accepted?
Yeah, so the Illinois Soy Association has done a lot of work with the Chicago Parks District, okay, as far as running their big diesel mowers and the people that don't have cabs on those as far as the exhaust and how those people feel at the end of the day versus regular diesel and how much cleaner and better for the environment and also the workers that they do by running 20% biodiesel and how much. And we've also got studies where in impacted areas or low-income areas, it's where they run diesel buses and that kind of, the biodiesel buses and that kind of stuff where it's a lot less accident or evidences of asthma and that kind of stuff. So we've done a lot of work with its farmer's money as far as doing research, just how much cleaner the fuel is and how much better it is to breathe. And a cool thing we used to say when we were little, especially when we were just getting in soybeans, I started in 2010 on the Illinois Soybean Board. If you stood next to like a biodiesel bus, it smelled like French fries because they were reclaiming used cooking oil to make that biodiesel. And we always knew when we were next to them, like downtown Peoria, Illinois, especially, they were all on 20% biodiesel and all their bus fleet and that kind of stuff for public transportation. And it's just interesting to see from going from the, you know, a bean field or a cornfield or a cattle lot, you know, to which, you know, Peoria is not that big, okay, but it's not Chicago, but it's interesting when farmers get around and they say, you smell that, and it smells like French fries.
So a lot of the opportunities here are set by the Renewable Fuel Standard, the RVO, and we did get some new numbers out from EPA on that, Dave. Why is soybean industry not really excited about it?
Well, the number was actually shockingly low for us. We were expecting some larger growth in that number. We were expecting between 500 and 650 million gallon growth for the three-year period that it covers. We actually saw 50 to 65 is what EPA is telling us. So they actually got it off by a decimal point. They needed to add a zero behind that number to get it right. The intent of the RVO was to be kind of a stretch goal for the industry. And Congress wanted to make it so that it built up to that number every time they put a new number out. Actually, what EPA has done is sort of cap that market. So there's actually one renewable diesel plant being built right now that would use all of the increase over the next 3 years by itself. EPA didn't take into consideration the growth that was about to happen in the industry. So as Greg mentioned with the crush plants, we have four crush plants that have been proposed in Iowa. When EPA came out with that lower number, they hit a pause button, and those plants aren't being built right now because there's no additional demand for oil. So those folks that were growing soybeans in the area near the crush plant that were set to get a better basis or a better price for their crop now are missing that opportunity. And it goes back to the rural economy. So EPA really needed to take a look at that, and it's money off the table for a lot of those folks that are growing soybeans around those crush plants that are no longer being built. So we have an opportunity now. We're past the comment period. EPA is going to take another look at that. We're still hoping they do the right thing and bring that number back up to that 500 to 600 million gallon a year growth over a three-year period. But if they don't, they're really putting a damper on the entire industry from farmers all the way out to end users.
So, Greg, maybe this is a question for you. If we lose that demand, you obviously have options when it comes to what you're going to put in the ground. If these numbers stick, and will we possibly see a change in acreage?
Well, that's possible. Farmers will grow what is a profitable crop, and we're seeing the demand for soybean oil being at good levels now. But without help from EPA making sure that they set these volumes correctly, that will be a game changer. I think back of some of EPA's additional responsibilities, and that is that in setting these volumes, they are supposed to look at the rural economic development that biodiesel, renewable diesel brings. For instance, in the state of Nebraska, we have about 5,900 jobs that are tied to the biodiesel and renewable diesel industry. 5,000 of those 5,900 are in small rural communities, and those are good-paying jobs, career-type jobs. And if we would lose that, just think of the ripple effect that has throughout the economy. Another thing that EPA is supposed to look at when setting volumes is the environmental aspect, as these two gentlemen have said. We have a fuel now that is available now, it can be used now successfully, no engine modifications, and reduces carbon by over 70%. And that's what's really driving the West Coast and the East Coast, with California now having over 40% of their diesel pool being made up of biodiesel and renewable diesel because of carbon reduction. And we see the National Oil Heat Research Alliance going to a B100 blend by the year 2050. I'm confident, and Dave sits on that board currently, that they'll be there long before 2050 because they want to reduce carbon. And we have a fuel that does that. And so EPA needs to kind of wake up and smell the roses here. Farmers have built this program. We know what we're doing. RFS is a wonderful piece of legislation, a bipartisan piece of legislation put together over 20 years ago. It needs to work, and EPA needs to understand that, hey, we need to increase these volumes, and we have the data to prove that we're right.
Last one, Rob. You get the crystal ball question. So as you look down the road, and obviously there are things like EPA's RVOs can change this, but when you look in the crystal ball, what do you see coming down the road?
So several billions of dollars being built on crush plants, okay? And then our job with those investments from the industry is for, number one, for us to produce the beans so then they can crush them to make it into the sustainable aviation fuel, renewable diesel, and biodiesel. And then also for us as ASA, National Corn Growers, to go to Washington, talk to the champions, Stabenow, Durbin, Duckworth from Illinois, Grassley from Iowa, who wrote the RFS, to get to communicate not only our message that we communicate with EPA and Administrator Reagan, but also to put pressure from the senators and the House to get with EPA to get that decimal point moved, okay, and explain to them what happens back home with the local jobs, the local farmers, you know, less production. I'm on a co-op board, okay, elevator co-op board, which is a bunch of farmers that own big elevators, okay, and that would mean less volume for us on the bean side, okay. So, well, it's an unbelievable story that started over 30 years ago with when they couldn't get rid of soybean oil, that farmers innovatively took a byproduct, okay, and learned how to make it, make diesel fuel out of it, make energy out of it. That's sustainable. We can grow it every year. It's a drop-in. All you need to do is change filters. I mean, you don't have to change tanks. You don't have to modify things. It's an actual unbelievable win-win-win for the American, for the America, the American farmer, and the industry and taxes in general.
Which is why we're at the booth of the Clean Fuels Alliance America. Rob Schaefer is the American Soybean Association Board, Greg Anderson with the Nebraska Soybean Board, and Dave Walton is with the, is it Iowa?
American
Soybean Association, but producer as well from Iowa. Great to see y'all. We wish you the best. From the 2023 Commodity Classic in Orlando, I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.